This is an ABC podcast.
Talofalava. My name is Talia Olatia, and you're listening to the summer edition of Pacific Beat here on ABC Radio Australia. There's been some rain in Melbourne in the last 24 hours, but the Australian bushfires rage on. Lives have been lost, hundreds of homes have reportedly been damaged, and nearly half a billion animal species have died. In the district of Batlow, which is on the southwest slopes of New South Wales, fires have burnt through fruit orchards in the town. Batlow is home to the Big Apple and one of Australia's premier apple-growing regions. There are many Pacific Islander workers on seasonal worker programs working in Batlow who this morning are waiting to see if they have a farm to go back to work to. Greg Mowat, a third-generation orchardist and on the board of directors of the Batlow Fruit Company, spoke to RN Breakfast earlier this morning about the situation in Batlow.
I don't know how many farm houses and farm buildings have been damaged. It's just another one of those unknowns. And until we can get some access there, and until we can put our footprint in the orchard, we just don't know. But we know the service station in town's gone. We know the old cannery site's gone. We know the old hospital site's gone.
Wow.
We've heard that there's around 20-odd houses that have been lost in Batlow. So, this is really just unprecedented territory. It's just really difficult to comprehend, actually.
Coming up on Pacific Beat, you'll hear from a seasonal worker from Vanuatu who was evacuated to Wagga Wagga and is waiting to see what happens next for him and the 47 other workers who were also evacuated. And speaking of Vanuatu, on the program, you'll also hear how people in Vanuatu now have access to a so-called mobile wallet, allowing them to spend and save digitally from their mobile phones.
It just looked to me like it was easy and more fast and reliable, and it was a mobile company that I could trust and I'm currently using, so that's why I decided to use it.
Also, did you catch me on Island Music on the weekend announcing the winner of the Pacific Break competition? I now have a newfound appreciation for envelope opening winning announcers. It's a lot of pressure making sure you don't get the name wrong. Well, if you missed who the winner is, then stay tuned because Island Music presenter Rick Howe interviewed the winner, and I'll replay that chat for you coming up on the program. And yes, look, you could just go to the ABC Radio Australia Facebook page and find out the winner there. But stick around. It's going to be a lot more fun this way. Those stories and more coming up on the summer edition of Pacific Beat with me, Talia Olatia. Like I said, the bushfires continue to burn across Australia. Leaders across the world have shared their sympathies, including Papua New Guinea's Prime Minister James Marape, who has offered 1,000 soldiers to help fight blazes if the need arises. The PNG government has also set up a fire appeal secretariat to raise funds for Australia over the coming 6 months. Acting Vanuatu PM Jotham Napat has also pledged to donate 20 million Vanuatu tana, which is approximately $250,000 Australian dollars to the Australian Bushfire Services and Recovery. And workers on seasonal worker programs from the Pacific have also been caught up in the bushfires. 48 seasonal workers from Vanuatu had to abandon their camps near Batlow due to the approach of a bushfire last week and took refuge in the Batlow RSL Club before being evacuated to Wagga Wagga. James Walu is the worker spokesperson and he joins me now. Hello, James.
Hello.
Have you heard any news about the farm that you were working on, James?
Okay, thank you very much. So I've just had news from the farm that I'm working for, like the Montague and also the Costa Berry's farm.
Mm.
And even that's why I said to you last time that we're waiting until today, so the fire getting worse on Saturday.
Mm.
And we heard about the Batlow, that the fuel station, and also 8 households of downtown, and also one person in Batlow lost like his life, so it's trying to caring to help someone else to help to secure his own path.
Yeah,
that's like, so that's a small community. So for our farm, we want to say big thank you to God Almighty, because it's a miracle. When my boss come and see me, say that, James, we don't believe it. Ours, we save the tree orchard, and how we save your camp. So the fire just come and just place just 1 meter away. So just like just run through the camp and also the fuel station at the main farm, and also the outreach orchard, it's just safe. It's just some damage, but not really too much, but just few. But we want to say thank you very much, because all of our families back home in Vanuatu, and also us here, we keep on praying for our farm to getting protected, so we can have a job. So now we thank you. Thank God Almighty, because now we're going to go back to our job when the road and the electricity is getting back well. Then we're going to go back and have a job back in our farm.
How did you feel, James, when your boss called you to say that the farm was still there?
We're thinking that we're going to come back home, because we don't know anything. So when my boss called yesterday and said that, James, we are so lucky. Our tree orchard is safe, and calm, that you guys sleep safe. And all of us, when I let the 47 boys know that everyone, they just praise God and singing, because they feel that they're going to have a job again.
Yeah, it must be so much relief for you guys that you're safe, that your jobs are safe, but also for your families back home in Vanuatu too, because I know that the money that you make while working in Australia goes back to your families in Vanuatu. So that would have added to a lot of stress and pressure that you guys were feeling over the weekend about what would have happened next had the farm gone.
Yes, like I said to the boys yesterday, that it's better we patient and hear from our boss. We must patient. So like yesterday I said, it's not good that we came back to Vanuatu, but if we like getting two weeks off, like now we are in Waka, it's more better than we came back to Vanuatu. So if we came back to Vanuatu, we cannot take any money back home. But like now, when we heard from boss say that now we cannot go back and complete our session, so it's a good news for us.
Did your boss give you any indication that when you return to work that you'll be doing work that was similar to what you were doing before, or will the fire have impacted that in some way?
Okay, my boss gave me like said that maybe you guys would they fix the hotel, so that maybe you guys gonna stay back at the hotel until they put back everything's going to normal, like clearing the road and also the electricity, because you know, we just use the electricity to prepare all the things to cook and at the camp.
Yeah, so there's a lot of logistical things that still need to be worked out, but it is so great that you guys are all safe. James, what's the experience been like for you? Have you ever seen anything like this or gone through anything like this in Australia or back home in Vanuatu?
Thank you. I've never saw anything like this before. We experienced a bushfire back home in like my own island in Vanuatu, but never like this. Like, this is just too dangerous for me. Like, in Vanuatu, like, just burn the bush, but not the house. Like, in Australia, just, like, burn everything. So it's a big experience, so it's more danger. And just want to say thank you, because we are safe, and thank you for all the people that they are looking for us, like our employers, our farmers, and also the Australian government through the disaster and Red Cross. Also, they help us to take us like to evacuation center, and still they keep on feed us, give us food. So we want to say thank you very much for the help. And also, For me, I just want to say thank you too for my cavemen in Vanuatu, because give 220 million Vatu to help Australian firefighters. So that's a good thing. Like, we must maintain the relationship like between Vanuatus and Australia, because most of the Nivan, they come in Australia to work, to get money for the families back home. But I would just want to say big thank you to my cavemen too.
Being good friends and neighbours. Now, James, do you think that this experience, what you've gone through, may, I don't know, impact other seasonal workers coming from Vanuatu to work in Australia, given that, you know, there might now be a risk of more bushfires? I know I asked this because I saw that recruit of seasonal workers from Vanuatu actually boarded the plane for Victoria on New Year's Day. So do you think, like, moving forward with the seasonal workers program, that people might be reluctant to come and work in Australia given the bushfires, or do you think that it won't have any impact?
I think it's better, like, if the employers and the farmers, they should be waiting and see what's going on before they should get the workers here, because it's not really safe.
Yeah.
Like, for us, I'm looking after 40, like, we are 48, but I'm looking after 47. It's not easier to move them around. So, like I said, we move from two different places. We moved to Patlo RSL, then from Patlo RSL to Atelong RSL to Evacuation Center, then Atelong to Waka Waka. So it's not easier.
No.
So please, if any farmers or any agency in Vanuatu, like, they want to send, they should wait until see the monitor the fire in Australia, like in the New South Wales and Victoria. Before they're going to send the workers here, because it's not easy. But we are so lucky that we have so many friends. So they help us. Even we know that areas, like within that two sessions that we already here, that we know very good at the Long and Waka. So it's more easier for us to move.
Yeah,
because
from Batlo to Wagga Wagga, it's about a two-hour drive. And with so many people, it is quite hard. But, you know, as you said, I think a lot of lessons will have been learnt moving forward, that both governments, both the Australian government and the Vanuatu governments, or different governments around the Pacific, will think about that, you know, if you've got these seasonal workers in Australia, to make sure that they are looked at after in times of emergency and mass evacuations. James, thank you so much for joining Pacific Beat. I'm glad to hear that you're safe and that the farm is safe. And we'll keep in touch over, you know, the coming weeks and months to see how you guys are doing.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, James.
Thank you.
That was James Wallow there. He is a seasonal worker from Vanuatu working at a Batlo farm that, as you heard, is safe. There are so many farms in Batlo that have big question marks because they can't access the roads to get in there. So it's good to hear that there is some good news from Batlo this morning. Neville Coop is the director of Nandraki Weather and joins us now for a weather update. Hello, Neville.
Good morning, Talia.
Now, Neville, I hear that the weather's looking good at the moment out there.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. We've had lovely weather right across the Pacific over the first few days of 2020. Of course, we had Tropical Cyclone Sarai pass through Fiji and Tonga close to New Year, just before New Year. So bright and sunny now. It's going to stay that way probably through to the middle of the week. And then we'll start to see things get a bit hot and steamy and some afternoon showers and thunderstorms developing around most of the islands, particularly in the west around Melanesia.
Now, you've got your eye on a system developing in the north of Australia in the Arafura Sea, which could spread to the rest of the Pacific as well.
Well, what we're seeing is the monsoon becoming very firmly established now across Indonesia and northern Australia. There is a tropical low that's being watched by the Bureau in Perth. That's just off the west coast of Broome. That system's going to deepen and probably become a named cyclone by tonight. And then it'll cross the coast probably early tomorrow, somewhere between Pardoo and LaGrange on the 80 Mile Beach, very remote part of Western Australia, not many people out there, but it's one of the most crossed coastal regions in the world, actually. So that system will come ashore, and then there's another system in the Arafura Sea that's between Papua province and the top end around Nhulunbuy. That's going to deepen over the next 24 to 48 hours and probably affect the eastern part of the top end. And that monsoon surge we expect to spread into the Coral Sea early next week, and that's when we'll start seeing things pick up again around our part of the world.
Interesting. Well, no doubt you'll keep us updated. Neville Coupe, thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Thank you. That was Neville Coupe there. He's the director of Nandraki Weather. And for weather updates at any time, you can always visit their website or Facebook page. You'll find them at Nandraki Weather.
Foreman, hold the front page!
Time now to find out some of the stories making news today. And to do that, we're joined by Priyanka Srinivasan. Hello, Priyanka.
Hello, Talia.
So, Priyanka, Marshall Islands, they're waiting to find out who their next president's going to be. The election, of course, was back in November, but who is actually going to be the president, will Hilda Heine keep her spot, will be revealed today. It's been a while, so there's been a delay, but what can we expect?
Yes, it has been a while. I can imagine that people in Marshall Islands must be quite, we're anticipating the news and getting quite anxious. But yes, this is how it's done in the Marshall Islands. So yes, they had the election, as you said, back in November. They have 2 weeks after the people go to the polls for candidates to contest the results, the early results. The results were announced. And now, as you mentioned, we're waiting. It should be in a couple of hours, in fact, that the parliament meets and then they elect their new president. Now, what are we expecting? So we're expecting that Hilda Heine, who, is the first female president of Marshall Islands and sort of became quite an ambassador for climate change, on the international stage. We're actually expecting her not to hold her her presidency.
Because she lost seats in the election count. So obviously it's all about the numbers when you're trying to become the president. So
exactly. So she held her own seat, but but the opposition, came or opposition parties, opposition candidates sort of were, came, the balance of power shifted toward then. Because the interesting thing about Marshall Islands is that they don't have strict parties like we do. The majority of them are actually independent. So we'll see what happens. And of course, keep you posted because it should be a quite interesting election. Obviously, the Compact of Free Association with the United States, that's the deal that sort of gives Marshall Islands and other territories quite special privileges with the United States.
I remember when the election was happening, everyone was like, Beijing, Taiwan and Washington would all be looking at the Marshall Islands to see where they're going to go and what's going to happen, because there are a few, international power plays taking hold.
Exactly, yes. So it should be one to watch. And as soon as those election results are released, we'll give you an update on our show.
Absolutely, we will. And Richard Ewart will be along for the afternoon edition of Pacific Beat from 3 p.m. PNG time. So by then, we should definitely know who it is. And he'll bring you those results. Now, Priyanka, a parent of the US couple that mysteriously died in Fiji last May is pleading for more information. Can you tell us more?
Yes, that's right. That's being reported by the Fiji Times today. So you might remember, so last May there was this two US tourists who came to Fiji for a holiday and unfortunately and really tragically died within 2 days of each other after contracting some sort of illness. They were vomiting, quite sick, rushed to hospital. So since May, there's been sort of a vacuum of information is what the dad of Michelle Paul, one of those couples, the US couples, is saying. And he's sort of pleading with the Fiji government to provide more information. What he's asking for is his daughter's watch, which he believes is still, he doesn't have, so he wants. And also the autopsy report, which they still haven't gotten. Obviously, it's nearing almost a year later. It happened May last year. So you can understand
that. Yeah, wanting answers. And also like a certain sense of closure. Like, yes, he can't get his daughter back, but just knowing more might bring him some peace.
Exactly.
So,
and for everyone, because it is a mystery, and to know, particularly when it comes to illnesses, and, you know, they have ruled out infectious disease. An Australian team was also assisting with that investigation, and, of course, authorities in Fiji and along with the FBI. So they have ruled out infectious disease as the cause, but there are still a lot of questions about what happened, and certainly, yes, the mystery remains. So we'll see if those pleas get answered. The American embassy, at least, is saying that they're still investigating, and the investigation is continuing. So we'll see where that goes.
Indeed, we will. And finally, Priyanka, you have a story about snakes, nuclear missiles, and an endangered kingfisher. What on earth is going on there?
Yes. So actually, this comes off a story that one of our reporters did last week. Marla Damadi, she wrote us a story, I'm sure you remember, about
on
Guam snakes.
Yes,
exactly. Yep. So that's one piece of the puzzle. So basically, she was talking about these brown tree snakes in Guam sort of decimating their wildlife. They were introduced.
Huge threat.
Exactly. Mm. They were introduced in the 40s and sort of just took over and have really upset the ecosystem there. And one of the sort of wildlife in its path of destruction has been the Guam kingfisher, a beautiful bird.
A bird. Every time someone says kingfisher, I think it's a fish. And then I weirdly think it's a beer. And then I'm like, no, it's a bird.
Yes. You're sort of right with the beer. But yes, it is a bird, a beautiful bird, this blue, you know, blue colored wings and this sort of like dusty yellow breast that it has. And yeah, quite a beautiful bird. But it's been extinct. It's been out of... away in the wildlife. You can only find it in captivity for 30 years, so quite a long time, all because of this brown tree snake. Yes. So now you might be wondering where nuclear missiles fit into all this. So Guam...
Don't tell me the brown snakes have somehow figured out a way to have some nuclear missiles and off they go.
Well, no, not quite. But there is a bit of fear because these brown tree snakes have been sort of getting into the power lines, hanging off power lines and really affecting the power system there. And the worry is because Guam is used as a military base for America. It's an American territory or, you know, U.S.
Could they set off a missile?
Well, the fear is that because North Korea has been, you know, sort of potentially, you know, Guam has been thought of being a threat to a nuclear missile from North Korea.
Yeah.
So the fear is if that does happen, imagine if Guam was sort of, you know, incapacitated by these tree snakes, and then what would happen? So the military, the U.S. military actually conducted this big sweep of brown tree snakes in Guam a short time ago and trying to get rid of them just so that they could be ready if a nuclear strike happened. Now, this had the other sort of beneficial outcome, that now there's a bit more of an open door for the kingfisher to be reintroduced from the zoos out of captivity, out of, you know, potential extinction.
Yeah.
And that's what the Calgary Zoo, that have these Guam kingfishers in captivity, are hoping to do. So, in a sort of circuitous way, they're able to hopefully reintroduce the kingfisher. They're hoping to do that by next year.
Obviously,
which will be some good news.
A conservation method that only works when your predator is the Guam brown snake, and probably not for all those other animals that have a threat where you're just like, oh, some nuclear missiles. Like, let's work around the problem this way.
I know. It's a shame that they didn't just get rid of the brown tree snakes to help the kingfisher anyway.
Yeah.
There had to be the nuclear missile that came in. But, you know, whatever. The outcome's the same.
Exactly. Priyanka, thank you so much for bringing us those stories.
No worries. Thanks, Talia.
It truly is an interesting world out there. That was Priyanka Srinivasan with some of the stories making news today.
Radio Australia now has a WhatsApp. Just add +614 375 19 385 to your phone. It means you can message Radio Australia from anywhere in the Pacific. So add +614 375 19 385 and send us a message. Tell us what you want to hear and join the conversations on Radio Australia.
You're listening to the summer edition of Pacific Beat. My name is Talia Olatia. And it was a competition that spanned 5 months, five time zones, and the widest range of musical styles. But the winner of the Pacific Break competition for 2019-2020 was announced on the weekend by me, coincidentally, on Island Music. If you didn't hear it, this is what happened.
Time to announce the winner of the 2019 Pacific Break competition. But first, congratulations to the 10 finalists, Sprigger Mech, Tio Bang, The Villager, Zabana Ambassadors, Roddox and Senche, Frequency Groove, PJ, Paran Latan, Jagariza and Jay Lee, and Lococo. But joining us in the Island Music Studios now to announce the winner is the wonderful Talia Olatia from Pacific Mornings.
Hello, Rick. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I feel like I have so much power.
You're
right now.
You're entrusted with the envelope.
It's not the envelope. We're doing it in true award like season fashion, where it's a piece of paper where I open it and the answer will be revealed. When do I get to do it?
As soon as we start our drum roll.
And the winner of the 2019-2020 Pacific Break competition is Sprigger Mech from PNG. What a party. That's right. PNG's Sprigger Mech will be on the WOM Adelaide stage performing at Australia's biggest world music festival. Performing at the same festival, I might add, as Ziggy Marley, Kate Miller Hickey, and the Blind Boys of Alabama. Sprigger Mech is a native Kanaka rapper from Port Moresby in Papua New Guinea, and he spoke to Rick Howe, Island Music presenter, about winning the competition and his musical influences.
I actually really wanted to be like a singer, but I can't sing, like, seriously, to save my own life. So I found it easier to rhyme and connect and twist and bend words. And then I think it just, when I started rapping, it just, like, came naturally for me. And I wanted to, like, really set myself apart, like, be unique. So I wrote the song, my first single, Sweet Mikhail. I wrote the whole song in English. And that was the story at the back of my head. Was like, you know, man, you can speak your language, so why don't you try rapping it? So after the first line and the second line, when it rhymed, that was like a eureka moment for me, light bulb, you know? I was like, wow, I can actually do this, man. From the listeners and people, so I was like, all right, that's my niche, that's what I'll be doing, trying to infuse and work tribal topless lingo hip-hop, you know. But I basically I listen to a lot of stuff, not just hip-hop, man, like rock, reggae, ska, classical music, Celtic music, like anything that gives me a good vibe. Yeah, like if I hear a good instrumental and it gives me a certain vibe, like it kind of tells me what to write about and how to go about it, then I can rock with it with a rhyme or rap or anything. So that's just, yeah, a little bit of everything, but I mainly mix it around hip-hop, rap, drop some knowledge and conscious vibes to the masses. So that's what I've been doing, and so far it's been good. And so far I've won the Pacific Break comp, so, man, that's just... It keeps getting better and better, man.
Things keep getting better and better indeed. That was the winner of the Pacific Break competition, PNG rapper Sprigger Mech, talking to Island Music presenter Rick Howe. And you can catch Sprigger Mech on the WOM Adelaide stage in March, and we'll be sure to keep you updated on his journey here on ABC Radio Australia. We heard a little bit of Sprigger Mech's music, so why not hear some more? This is Pick Doc Soldiers. No got one black guy, guy. Finding the click money, man, I'm ready walking kind, kind. Some block on a walk, now some block on the walk, stop. Randy lose the school, now walk up on the road, stop. Kind, kind, passing belong you, fella, passing that's all one kind, passing belong you, me, no, a sense. Cause one fella house, he got ten fella family. One fella man, he got ten fella baby. Two fella bullet, now passing belong blessed land. We fella round come, now walking blessed style. Beginning, man, what them brain belong anymore. All big land inside, but the second more. So time you hang it up around belong you, met in it. Time you will pull up, now so up, turn by hege, rege. Cannot wait to see what Sprigger Mech does on the WOM Adelaide stage. That was his song, Pick Doc Soldiers. No doubt that will be in his hour set when he plays at WOM Adelaide. On his Facebook page, Sprigger Mech wrote, "Thank you, ABC Radio Australia, for the opportunity. I am humbled and honoured to be an ambassador for PNG hip hop, my country and the Pacific region as a whole. To all artists who took part in the competition, thank you and much respect for your time and effort as well. Keep on bringing those fine tunes. Thank you to my supporters who've been down with me since day one. I will see you all at WOM Adelaide 2020 in March." And he also threw out a special mention to Andrew DJ Bots Kutan, who tagged him on the page about the competition. He says, "Thank you, blood, peace and love." Like I said, can't wait to see what Sprigger Mech does at WOM Adelaide, Australia's biggest world music festival in March. And we'll definitely keep you updated here on ABC Radio Australia.
ABC Radio Australia. Join Andrew West for the Religion and Ethics Report.
A survey of more than 1,000 Australians has found that almost 80% of you believe respect for a person's religious beliefs is important in a multicultural society.
What we found overall is that Australians have a relatively positive attitude towards religion. They think that religion should be respected in a multicultural society. But where we found the key tension was that Australians seem to be viewing religious individuals and religious organisations separately. So they're happy for religious people to say their religious beliefs in public, even when they're offensive, but they're unsure about religious organisations hiring according to their faith. And that is the key tension that we found.
The Religion and Ethics Report, Wednesday evening, 5:30 PNG time, and Thursday afternoon after Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
My name is Talia Olatia, and you're listening to the summer edition of Pacific Beat. Described as one of the most ambitious ocean conservation initiatives the world has ever seen, the National Marine Sanctuary in Palau officially came into being on New Year's Day. The North Pacific Island nation has also become the latest to abandon single-use plastic bags, and it's introduced a ban on certain types of sunscreen as well. And after a year in which two of Taiwan's remaining allies in the Pacific, Solomon Islands and Kiribati, jumped ship to Beijing, Palau has been celebrating its long-standing ties with Taipei. Richard Ewart reports.
It was October the 28th, 2015, when President Tommy Remengesau Jr. signed into law the Palau National Marine Sanctuary Act. Now, after a transition period of more than 4 years, the law has come into force, and commercial fishing has been banned in four-fifths of Palau's exclusive economic zone, an area covering 500,000 square kilometres. The remaining fifth of the EEZ will be reserved for traditional fishing and for use by a highly regulated domestic fleet that will serve Palau's domestic and tourism needs. President Remengesau says what his government is doing is protecting what he calls his country's nest.
It's a very ambitious and worthy goal for Palau's future, especially for the future generations of young Palauans. Hopefully, Marine Sanctuary will always stand as a reminder that we have to live and respect the environment, because the environment is the nest of life. Without the nest, nobody in Palau can survive.
The inspiration for the marine sanctuary is Palau's long history of effective fisheries management through the local practice of bull. It's what the Council of Chiefs have used to place strategic restrictions on fishing in vulnerable reef areas to protect biodiversity and maintain food security. So, in effect, the tradition of bull has now been extended to cover the country's entire EEZ. But Yimnan Golbu, the chief executive of the Palau International Coral Reef Centre, the agency administering the National Marine Sanctuary, says while the relevant law may be enforced now, there is still much work to be done.
We have to continue to work to improve our enforcement, build our capacity using the latest technology and work on surveillance. We have to continue to help develop the domestic fishery. And the reason why that is so important is we want to ensure the benefit of the Palau National Marine Sanctuary flow to our food security, to our livelihoods, to our well-being. So it's fully implemented, but the war continues.
The Marine Sanctuary Initiative has been hailed on the world stage at the United Nations as the way forward for marine conservation. And Mr. Golbu believes what Palau has done will be a catalyst.
We hope that it can be an inspiration to others, eh? That for a small country like Palau to be able to say, we're going to claim ownership of this 80% of our EEZ, and we're going to manage it to help with our food security and our well-being. I think it's a strong message to other countries that if a small country like Palau with limited resources can do it, maybe we can do it also.
And other countries have already followed the example, like Cook Islands, where a bill was passed in 2017, paving the way for the creation of Murray Moana, a multiple-use marine protected area covering almost 2 million square kilometres. Meanwhile, another aspect of Palau's marine conservation drive is centred on banning the use of certain types of sunscreen. Stores selling prohibited sunscreen can now face fines of close to $1,400, and bottles will be confiscated from tourists upon entry. The ban is aimed at products that contain reef-toxic chemicals like oxybenzone and octinoxate, and is part of the new Responsible Tourism Education Act. And President Remengesau says education will be the key to success.
It's going to be an educational challenge for every visitor to realize that there is a law in Palau. So we do have to have posters at the airport and maybe some brochures and education about the airline. Especially the tour group operators, they need to also be a part of this. So we don't really want this to be like a total police effort. We want this to be a community awareness and community improvement.
So a period of great change lies ahead for Palau, but at the turn of the year, the country reaffirmed that no change in its long-standing relationship with Taiwan is on the horizon. At an official ceremony to mark two decades of diplomatic ties, President Rumengesau pointed out that the alliance was almost as old as Palau itself.
That the Republic of Palau has only just celebrated its 25th Independence Day anniversary. 20 years of friendship is a very significant milestone for us. Taiwan is one of Palau's closest neighbors. Of course, we are close geographically, which is why we all appreciate the commitment China Airlines has made here in Palau. But Taiwan is also one of Palau's closest neighbors, culturally, politically, and historically.
And in his speech, it was clear from Vice President Chen Chen-jen that Taiwan will be leaning ever more heavily on Palau in future years after Solomon Islands and Kiribati were wooed away by China.
It was President Kunio Nakamura who made the decision 20 years ago to establish relations with Taiwan, marking a historic step forward in our bilateral ties. Over the past two decades, Palau has stood shoulder to shoulder with Taiwan and been one of our staunchest allies in the Pacific.
And based on Mr. Rumengesau's vision of the future, it would appear that the Palau-Taiwan connection will endure, and that the president has bigger ideas.
We demonstrate this respect and this commitment through our bilateral cooperation, through our contributions to multilateral organizations, and through our responsible, respectful engagement with the international community. Together with other regional partners, we are working to extend these values of peace and security and to build a free and open Indo-Pacific.
That was the president of Palau, Tommy Rumengesau Jr., ending that report from Richard Hewitt. That was produced with the assistance from Bernadette Carrion in Palau.
Pacific Mornings with Talia Olatia.
What's your name?
Fiona.
And what are you doing here today, Fiona?
Dancing for Nishan Pearl.
So what does that involve?
Someone Siva dancing for young girls.
Weekdays from 6:30 a.m.
I'll just get you to test your mics.
Hey, hey, 1, 2, 1, 2. Whoa, 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 whoa. Is that okay?
I'm now going to demand all my guests to check exactly like that.
Pacific Mornings on Radio Australia.
I accidentally played that promo because I am the presenter of Pacific Mornings. But as I was listening back to it, I was like, oh, I remember that interview with the girls from Nishan Pearl who were dancing at Fitzroy Hall. And then the guys who you heard singing while doing the mic check, they were the Modern Māori Quartet who were performing in Melbourne. And I was thinking back, wow, we did some fun stories last year on Pacific Mornings. And no doubt we will do some fun stories this year as well. Pacific Mornings comes back to you. Well, I assume it comes back to you next week because I finished the summer edition this week. Catherine Grau is back in the Pacific Beach chair next week. So I assume everything just goes back to normal when we go and hit 2020 running. How about a little bit of music? This is Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers. The song is Islands in the Stream.
Tender love.
What an absolute banger. That was Dolly Parton and Kenny Rogers with the song Islands in the Stream. And when you think of it, we're islands in the stream if the stream is the Pacific Ocean and you get that metaphor. But it is such a classic of a song. And it reminds me, do you remember like back in, when was it? I want to say it was like 2000, like maybe it was released around 1998, but I'll tell you a story, dear listener. I can't sing. We've talked about this a lot on Pacific Mornings, but I am quite theatrical. And so when I was in grade 10, I decided to try out for the school musical. It was called The Music Man. And I knew that I wasn't going to get a lead. Like, I'm not delusional, but I thought, hey, chorus member, what a great idea. So me and a friend, we sang Ghetto Superstar, which was the version of that, which was brought out by like Prass and Meyer and Old Dirty Bastard. And we were like, Ghetto Superstar. And we were so, like, it was me and my friend Elise. Could not sing to save our lives. But the person who was casting us was like, oh, I really like your enthusiasm. You can be a chorus member. And so I was really proud. Like, I was in a musical. And I will never forget, because I told my mum, like, I excitedly went home and I was like, Mum, guess what? I'm in a musical. And do you know what her response was? We'll never forget it. She's like, did they hear you sing? And I was like, yes. And she was like, what are you doing? I was like, I'm in the chorus. That makes sense. Such shade from Marina Oletteia, but fair. Like, if you have heard me sing, you'll probably be like, how were you in a musical? But that song, not only Islands in the Stream, but also Ghetto Superstar, hold a very special place in my heart.
Wherever you are in the world, watch stories from home, anytime, with the new ABC Australia iView app. Never miss a moment of the programs you love.
From Four Corners.
Welcome to Landline.
London, America is back.
Hello and welcome to 7:30.
We are having that debate.
And the stories that matter.
We owe it to people to tell the real story, to bring people the truth.
Download the new ABC Australia iView app. Yours to explore, anywhere, anytime.
So why not check it out?
Why not check it out, indeed. Now, using your mobile phone to pay for things is becoming commonplace in many parts of the world. In some hard-to-reach areas of the Pacific, where financial outlets such as banks can be few and far between, a mobile phone can be people's main way to track their finances and make payments. Well, now people in Vanuatu will also have access to a so-called mobile wallet, allowing them to spend and save digitally. Andrea Nearhoff has more.
What do you use your mobile phone for? For people in Vanuatu, their mobile phones can now also be financial devices, with Telecom Vanuatu Limited launching their MVATU mobile wallet. Deputy Manager of the Pacific Financial Inclusion Program, Krishna Narasimhan, said Fiji was the first Pacific nation to receive a mobile wallet in 2010, with Samoa, Tonga and now Vanuatu the latest countries to join this so-called digital revolution. He said the wallet is more accessible than a traditional bank account.
It's like an electronic wallet that actually is linked to the mobile phone and to the typical phone number that particular person has. And with the wallet, you can do multiple transactions like transferring money, paying your bills, sending and receiving like payments, cash in and cash out transactions.
While access to financial outlets may be limited, mobile phones are seemingly ubiquitous. According to Mr. Narasimhan, if you have a network connection, you have a financial portal.
In theory, all like mobile phone top-up points where people can top up their mobile phone with airtime can also become like points of financial transaction. It can happen in the market. It can happen in the rural like pockets. The basic requirement is just availability of network connection in those locations.
Larissa Haley is one of those using the new mobile wallet, and she's got nothing but positive things to say about it.
It just looked to me like it was easy and more fast and reliable, and it was a mobile company that I could trust and I'm currently using, so that's why I decided to use it. And it's affordable as well, like it's free to register, I don't have any fees to pay, and it's convenient, and it reduced risk of carrying cash actually. I can actually just store cash in my phone.
Officials say the difference between the amount of men and women owning and using mobile phones means fewer women are also using the mobile wallet. Those behind the wallet's introduction, though, are hopeful it could help reduce this gender gap too.
There are also research reports and studies that point to if the service is offered on a mobile phone, then the take-up by, say, women is higher, basically because they don't have to leave the confines of their house or the village. They can do the transaction from within the village or from their house. And they are a little more comfortable rather than going and facing a teller in a bank, because there are cultural issues, there are literacy issues.
Customer Larissa also thinks the digital wallet is handy for female users.
As a woman, you know, you have responsibilities at home and all that. So using the mobile wallet actually helped me in terms of transport. It was convenient. I didn't have to travel far to do transfers or pay for this or deposit. I was just home and I could use my phone easily and then get back to my chores or looking after my siblings and etc. It's really good, actually. I would advise women to use it.
And after using MVATU for around a month, Stephanie Sali can't remember a time without it.
It facilitates transportation. Yeah, instead of going to the shop and buy a CVR card or something like that, you can only transfer or select option by credit and then you transfer money. Okay, for me, I think MVATU is it's a good service. It makes, you know, life become more with MVATU.
It really does make a difference. It makes me think of how long I've taken my phone for granted, and I do all my last minute banking on the way of when I need money out. So it will definitely make a difference. That was Stephanie Sali there, ending that report by Andrea Nierhoff.
You're listening to ABC Radio Australia.
It's All in the Mind. I'm Lynn Malcolm. New explorations of the brain, the mind and our behaviour.
All right, Download This Show is what you are listening to. It is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture.
This is just so much like George Orwell's 1984. You know, maybe they were just going through old science fiction looking for ideas.
This is Future Tense.
Radio Australia.
Our technology is using techniques such as ontology mapping and semantic processing. We can understand mood. It could be sarcasm, it could be humour.
And this is The Science Show.
Talk to your baby. Just talk all the time to your baby, because your baby is picking up so much useful knowledge.
From the moment the baby's born.
Even before, 3 months before birth, they're already starting to be able to perceive something about the structure of sound.
Extraordinary place, extraordinary beings.
For interesting discussions with interesting people. ABC Radio Australia.
My name is Talia Olatia, and that is all for the summer edition of Pacific Beat for this morning. Remember, if you want to listen back to any of the stories from today, just go to the ABC Radio Australia webpage at radioaustralia.net.au, and you can listen back to the show at any time. And we'll put that interview up of James Warlow, the Vanuatu evacuated seasonal worker in Batlow, talking about what that experience has been like. And we also post a lot of our stories to the ABC Radio Australia Facebook page. So if you're not already following us, make sure you do, so that our news stories can pop up in your news feed at any time. Richard Ewart will be along for the afternoon edition of Pacific Beat. You can catch him from 3 p.m. PNG time. Enjoy your Monday. I'll catch you same time tomorrow. See you then.